Chapter 13, Favoring the Wives of the Brahmanas. While performing the pastime of stealing the gopis' clothes, Krishna temporarily forgot about tending the cows. As he returned to his friends, Krishna savored bliss within his heart produced by eating the deliciously sweet fruit borne on the creeper of conjugal love. Balaram, the wielder of the plow, and the cowherd boys enthusiastically welcomed Krishna with feelings of joy. They entered the forest to continue their merrymaking and tending the cows. Krishna glorified Balaram and his intimate friends. "Hey, cultured friends! Hey, Stoka Krishna! I am so happy to see you! O Amsuman! Even while fighting, your body looks beautiful and effulgent. O Sridham! You are adorned with the opulent garland of all good fortune. Hey, Subal! Your strength is the wealth of your intense love. O Arjuna! Your white color is due to the pure fame of your deep love. O Vishal! The greatness of your love is always joyfully displayed. O Ojasvi! You are elegant due to your brilliant strength. O Devaprastha! Your form is the crest jewel on the mountain peak of fraternal affection. O Varatapa, because you have controlled the chariot of your mind, your commands are always obeyed. Look, my friends, just see the splendorous beauty of the forest grove. The trees look very attractive with their coral reddish buds enveloped by tender reddish green leaves. They look just like a pair of embracing lovers. The densely foliated branches of the trees completely cover the sky in all directions. Although many varieties of birds sit on the small branches, they are not bound there. They are independent and beyond the control of Cupid. What to speak of the radiant beauty of Vrindavan's trees, which is beyond the comprehension of the mind and words? Even if one takes birth in the effulgent and worshipable land of Vrindavan as an insignificant plant, he should still be accepted as a saint. Hunters attain the supreme happiness by using their bows and arrows to spoil the enjoyment of their enemies. Saints find delight within their purified minds and softened hearts. Karmis reap the fruits of their piety to taste the joy of heaven. Kshatriyas take pleasure in killing tigers and taking their skins as spoils. But just from the bark, leaves, or fruit of a tree in Vrindavan, one can derive inconceivable happiness. Taking birth as a tree in Vrindavan, therefore, is itself a perfection fulfilling all the needs of the soul. By speaking such matchless, enchanting words, Krishna fulfilled the desires of his friends. Continuing his delightful childhood pastimes, Krishna meandered along behind the cows. Since the cows had eaten a lot of grass, they felt thirsty and walked slowly. Out of affection, Krishna brought them to the Yamuna to drink some water. The tall trees on either side of the sandy path provided soothing shade. Accompanied by Balaram, his gopa friends and cows, Krishna happily approached the river Yamuna. If Krishna and his friends had not appeared on earth, no one would have understood their sweet moods of love. While the cows sipped the crystal clear water, Krishna rested on the root of a tree beside the path. Shining radiantly, Krishna made a plan within his mind to test the loving affection of the chaste wives of the Yagyik Brahmanas. Playing and roaming through the forest all day with the cows made the boys feel tired and hungry. The drops of perspiration on their weary faces looked like dewdrops on wilted lotus flowers. Due to hunger, they looked weak and lusterless. In this distressed condition, the cowherd boys fearlessly appealed to Krishna and Balaram, who were busy relishing the sweet smell of musk that pervaded the air. The boys said, "You are the supreme personalities. O Balaram, you are very strong, handsome, and radiant. O Krishna, your color resembles a fresh monsoon cloud, and you have powerful arms. We are being harassed by hunger, and you should do something about it." We feel like the virulent venom of a snake is burning us. Our raging appetites have turned our bellies into pots of burning fire. We cannot find any relief. Oh, beloved friends, you two brothers must think how to take away our agony. His heart softened by love, Krishna smiled slightly to reveal his beautiful teeth that are as white as kunda flowers. Then he advised his friends, "Oh, Sakas, listen. I will help you by telling you how to get relief from your misery. Not far from here are some very powerful and blissful brahmanas who are respected by the best of sages. They are performing the Angirasa sacrifice to gain promotion to heaven. They have attained brilliant fame because of their broad minds and liberal distribution of food. Besides their expertise in Vedic rituals, these Grahastha Brahmanas can easily dispel anyone's ignorance with their vast knowledge. Now quickly go offer obeisances to them, address them respectfully, and lovingly beg some foodstuffs in our names." Being ordered by Krishna, the pious, soft-hearted coward boys expertly and joyfully made their way to the Yajnasola, the sacrificial arena. Even though they were tired, the boys eagerly went to beg from the Brahmanas. Upon entering the Yajnasola, they enjoyed seeing the sacrificial fire and the dense clouds of smoke. The smell of burning ghee gratified their noses, and the warm air soothed their sense of touch. Hearing the Brahmanas' melodious singing of the Samaveda delighted their ears. The thought that they would soon receive some tasty foodstuffs to offer to Krishna made their tongues salivate in anticipation. Thus the coward boys gratified their senses at the gorgeously decorated Yajnasola. As Ramchandra, the lord of the Raghu dynasty, is called the Treta Yuga avatar because he appeared in Treta Yuga. Similarly, this Yajnasola is also Treta Yuga avataram because it has three types of fires, Ahavanya, Dakshina Agni, and Garapatya. As the city of Ayodhya is Vasara Yupuram, or beside the flowing waters of the famous river Sarayu. Similarly, this sacrificial fire is Vasara Yupuram, always receiving a constant supply of wood. As King Bhagarath, as Samunita Pragvamsam, the deliverer of his ancestors. Similarly, this yajna is Samunita Pragvamsam, or situated on the eastern side of the house. Its presence beautifies the homes of the Brahmana's patrons. A Brahmin boy who has not completed his brahmachari life is Same Kala Kundalamsam, or handsome with his waist belt and ropes made from munja grass draped over his shoulder. Similarly, this Yajnasala is Same Kala Kundalamsam, embellished with different raised seats placed around the fire pits. As the heart of one relishing rasas becomes sampumam pravishta, full by entering the ocean of bhakti ras. Similarly, the Yajnasala is pravishta rasa sampumam, complete by its abundance of kusha grass. As a house has a kitchen full of cooking pots, prajatalikam, to serve its guests, similarly, this Yajnasala is full of pots, prajatalikam, of pure ghee and water. As a separated lover's eyes always glisten with tears, similarly, this Yajnasala always shines with flames. During the rainy season, rivulets swell with water, Vishal Pumapatram, and make the middle of the river very deep. Similarly, in the middle of the Yajnasala, there are Vishal Pumapatram, deep pots full of foodstuffs. Clubs, Mushalam or Ulukala, are used to chastise a gentle, saintly person in the royal assembly of an evil king. Similarly, this Yajnasala has a mortar and pestle, Mushalam and Ulukala, for grinding the spices and ingredients used in the sacrifice. Kshatriyas are expert in using their hands for fighting Samit Kushalam. Similarly, this Yajnasala also has kusha grass and wood called Samit Kushalam. As Mahesh is Sohom, always associated with his consort Uma, similarly this Yajnasala is Sohom, always full of many oblations. Inside the Yajnashala, the coward boy saw many Yajnik brahmanas chanting hymns from the Samaveda. Similarly, of the four ways to control somebody, one is called Sama, appeasement or making friends. As one always enjoys embracing his lover to his chest, similarly hearing the precise enunciation of the hymns pleased everyone's heart. Just as the sages have beautiful locks of matted hair, Sujata Kam. Similarly, the hymns chanted by the brahmanas contain many sweet tunes, Sujata Kam. The breasts of young ladies appear firm and beautiful, Susaranitam. Similarly, the brahmana's singing sounded like a tightly composed display, Susamhitam, of beautiful poetry. What kind of yajnik brahmanas were they? As a worshipper is well versed in acting according to the proper time, samai, samayayai. Similarly, these brahmanas performed the yajnas exactly at the auspicious time, samai, samayayai, of morning and evening. Kshatriyas attained the wealth of victory in battle by repeatedly using their bows. Similarly, the brahmanas have become wealthy by constantly doing yajnas. After examining the Yajnashala, the coward boys walked slowly forward. Although they smelled the sweet aroma of the sacrificial fire, their stomachs remained empty and dissatisfied. Their bangles and ankle bells jingled sweetly as they bowed respectfully on the ground before the brahmanas. Even the King of Heaven esteemed these austere and renowned brahmanas who always received the seat of honor at any festival. As personifications of Vedic knowledge, they exhibited extreme gravity, yet they had deep personal feelings. In deep rumbling voices, the coward boys addressed the brahmanas. Oh, worshipable and cultured ones, please listen to us. We are friends of Balaram and Damodar coming here as your guests. Balaram, the embodiment of all wonderful transcendental qualities, is just nearby talking with his younger brother. They sent us to you because you are well-wishers of everyone. You may ask why Krishna did not come with us. The answer is that Krishna is fixed in his position, just like the immovable Mount Sumeru. As oceans of compassion, you brahmanas benefit all living entities. You always perform pious activities like digging wells, establishing parks and gardens, and making attractive walkways. Being dear to everyone, you satisfy all living entities by giving them the things they cherish, namely food. You have become effulgent due to your fame. You are charitable and fixed in Brahman. Since we left home early this morning, we have not eaten anything or taken any rest. We are very tired and hungry from roaming all over with the cows. Balaram and Damodar also feel distressed. Although they tolerated it for a short time, now they are anxious to eat something. Therefore, they sent us to beg some food from you because you are the maintainers of Grahastha Dharma. Please make arrangements to affectionately provide us with plenty of food. Although hearing the boys, these sober brahmanas remained silent just like deaf men. Understanding that the brahmanas felt no obligation to give them charity, the boys became morose. They thought that the brahmanas were treating them like hard-hearted, invalid old men. Though wise and learned in yajnas, why did the brahmanas ignore the humble request of the coward boys? Perhaps it was not their habit to entertain the requests of young children. Maybe they disregarded the boys due to their attachment to sacrificing animals, or due to enmity, foolishness, or insufficient piety, or because they had not received any mercy from the Lord. The boys' faces turned pale from disappointment. Lamenting over their failure, they unhappily returned to Krishna. Upon noticing their condition, Krishna remained equipoise and displayed a mild smile on his peaceful lotus face. The faces of the boys, however, conveyed frustration in their begging attempt. At that time, Krishna thought, those yajnik brahmanas are not actually charitable towards others. They simply make a big show with their elaborate fire sacrifices. It seems that their charity does not extend beyond the limits of their own bellies. Although mentally disturbed, the coward boys tried to explain the situation to Balaram. They said, "O Rama, we have never seen such harshness as we saw today in the eyes of those brahmanas. They are yajnik brahmanas in name only. Actually, they are first-class fools because they do not know the real purport of the Vedas. Mentioning your names, we beg foodstuffs which are pleasing to the soul. What to speak of giving charity, they did not even answer us, which is the minimum response enjoined in the Vedas. But in their homes we saw and heard them saying so many things such as, 'Cook this, fry that, let us drink, eat, come, go outside, take this away.' We saw those brahmanas, the crest jewels among the jnanis, busily engaged inside their houses, eating palatable foodstuffs. Outside their houses, many thousands of people milled about. Being angry, we did not bother to go there. Seeing the quality of generosity being so dishonored in the hands of the brahmanas, we did not want to stay there for a moment. By going to them, we received nothing more than utter humiliation, whereas they enhanced their family prestige by performing a huge yajna. O Krishna, our dear friend, we brought back nothing but the smoke that we momentarily inhaled at the fire sacrifice. Just like the Vedic injunctions, all of your instructions are held as crest jewels on our heads. Just as nectar never turns salty, how is it that your infallible words put us into such embarrassment?" Krishna smiled and spoke some sweet, pleasing words mixed with cleverness. "Oh, you boys, why are you affected by false anger? You should not have such a defiant, antagonistic mood like a newly married woman. It is natural that your minds are disturbed because selfish people like those brahmanas always cause suffering to others. Finding the faults in others is the habit of common people, but you should not see like this. Being preoccupied with the yajna, the brahmanas obviously could not attend to you. Listen carefully. You should follow my perfect advice and achieve the desired result. The wives of the brahmanas are also present in the yajnashala, but they are embodiments of kindness, compassion, and purity. They possess the wealth of having completely surrendered their minds to me. Although they are women, they do not take pride in turning beggars away from their doors. These women do not see anything unfavorable for my service. They immediately feel ecstatic upon hearing my name and viewing my transcendental form. They will happily give you plenty of food to remove your hunger. Besides being adorned in golden ornaments, the wives of the brahmanas regularly receive and willingly distribute gold in charity. Although they are brahmanas' wives, instead of sitting on the ground like ordinary women, they sit on golden thrones like queens with their bodies radiating a splendid luster. Feeling gladness within your hearts, go to their private quarters. In my name, ask for abundant foodstuffs which will bring you all satisfaction. The wives of the brahmanas who are just like desire trees will definitely gratify your cherished desires. Oh, my friends, taking my words as a Vedic injunction which is dear to you and to them, go there again and beg for food." Being inspired by Krishna's powerful presentation, the gopas left the garden full of fresh creepers. Riding the waves of pleasure, they quickly returned to the yajnashala. In a submissive mood, they approached the private chambers of the wives of the hard-hearted brahmanas. Just as lightning spreads throughout the sky and earth, similarly the boys saw the brahmanas' wives fully ornamented with the effulgent wealth of prestige. As the lightning and rain in the Shravana month become separated from the clouds, similarly the brahmanas' wives had given up sense enjoyment due to separation from Krishna. Although lightning flashes out of a cloud in a harsh way, the brahmanas' wives appeared soft-hearted. Lightning flashes brilliantly for a moment and is then detached from the body of the cloud, but the bodies of the brahmanas' wives always emitted an attractive radiance. As lotuses grow in the water and straight stems, similarly, the wives of the brahmanas spoke in a straightforward way. The wives of the brahmanas resembled golden creepers of flowing beauty moving here and there. But due to separation from Krishna, they could not find any pleasure. Even without the night, They exhibited effulgences rivaling the glowing full moon. In the absence of Krishna, however, they always felt unhappy. The Yajnaputnis, the wives of the Brahmanas, existed like the personified flames of a fire. Their saintly qualities derided the fame of Arundhati, the chaste wife of Brahmarshi Vasishtadeva. Somehow, they maintained a joyful state by the strength of their affection for Krishna, which acted like a celestial herbal medicine to sustain them and burn like the steady flame of an oil lamp. During any ceremony, these beautiful Brahmana ladies always behaved perfectly according to time and place. They displayed the limit of worldly conduct by welcoming their guests with sweet words and serving them first-class food. Due to their love for the Lord, they knew how to act properly in all circumstances. As vines of parental affection, they could not ignore the pleas of hungry children. Tolerating the shouts of their angry husbands, they appeared as the embodiments of forgiveness on the earth. Each one of them exhibited many attractive qualities, such as purity of purpose and absolute dedication to the Lord. Their wealth surpassed even that of the heavenly King Indra, who protects others with his thunderbolt. Upon seeing the Yajnaputnis, the boys immediately said, "O magnanimous wives of the greatest Brahmanas, we offer our obeisances to your pinkish lotus feet that are the source of generosity and happiness. We are close friends of Krishna, the personification of all knowledge. Please listen to our humble appeal." That one utterance of Krishna's name resonated within the ears of the Brahmana's wives millions of times over. Startled and astounded, they forgot everything and exclaimed, "What kind of enchanting mantra is this?" Just as a she-deer becomes helplessly attracted by the sweet flute melodies of a hunter, similarly, the Yajnaputnis swooned in ecstasy upon hearing the sound of Krishna's name. The pure-hearted wives of the Brahmanas, who appeared on the earth like the predominating deities of the Upanishads, stopped cooking and looked respectfully at the coward boys while fixing their minds in meditation. Inspired by Krishna's reassuring words, the boys smiled pleasantly and completed their request to the ladies. "O wives of the Brahmanas, we are very hungry. We did not take any breakfast and have been playing all day. The Prince of Vrindavan, who is the reigning Cupid of this world and the object of your worship, sent us to beg food. Krishna is waiting nearby with his elder brother Balaram, who always showers Krishna with joy and shines with the power of King Indra. Our dear friend Krishna is known throughout the world. Surely you must have heard about him from the lips of the great devotees. Even as a baby, he made the cruel witch Putana famous by giving her the post of his nurse. As a small boy, he pushed the terrible Trinavarta demon into the earth and turned Bakasura into an ugly corpse. He vanquished the venomous serpent Agasura and banished Kaliya from the Yamuna. What more can we say about his fantastic exploits? The glories of all the demons and devotees in the entire material manifestation cannot compare with a drop in the ocean of Krishna's unlimited nectarian glories." Upon hearing these words, the hearts of the ladies immediately melted in ecstatic love. They felt that the great treasure of Krishna's form, which is a constant flow of beautiful nectar appearing as inconceivable eternal existence, has suddenly manifested before them. The thought of directly meeting Krishna stole the chariots of their minds. Somehow or other, the eternal perfection that they desired for so long was now appearing before them. Drowning in an ocean of bliss, their eyes flooded with tears, and their tender, creeper-like bodies erupted in blissful bumps. Their senses went numb and stopped working. The transformation infused them with new life. This newly acquired good fortune enhanced their beauty. Their bodies displayed a splendid elegance as the intensity of their desire to meet their beloved increased more and more. Nourished by such hankering, the eyes of the Yajnaputnis filled with the form of Krishna. Seeing their increasingly ecstatic condition, the coward boys felt perplexed. While looking at each other with astonishment, they said, "Upon hearing our appeal, These respectful ladies went mad with the desire to see Krishna. Their actions are very strange. They are not moving, speaking, or looking at anything. Alas, has some evil planet mesmerized them? It is not surprising that the Brahmanas treated us rudely and totally ignored us. They did not even acknowledge our arrival or give us anything. But we are amazed that their lotus-eyed wives failed to give us anything, even after attentively hearing our request and showing us so much loving affection and intention to serve. Who can understand the mentality of the Yajnaputnis? How did their behavior change so radically? Something created a sweet mellow within their minds and made them ecstatic. That transformation could neither remove the cause nor remove the effect. While the humble coward boys talked in this way, the wives of the Brahmanas, although failing to respond verbally, went directly into their huge kitchens, which were thoroughly stocked by their maidservants. On a large plate, they expertly piled up rice, vegetables, and other delicious food, which represented their loving desire to please Krishna. The delicious items included creamy cakes, sweetbreads, chapatis, yogurt, and a complete array of delicacies to lick, chew, drink, and suck. They lovingly prepared food of all six tastes, just as the caves, Kunder, and gentle wind blowing on Govardhan Hill served the Lord. Similarly, they collected many kinds of root vegetables, kanda, to please the Lord. Before offering them, they artistically arranged all the fragrant, juicy, delicious, and colorful preparations. Just as a woman beautifies herself by wearing golden ornaments, similarly, the varieties of attractive vegetables like sauk and sukta embellish their offering. As the minds of the Yajnaputnis enriched with spontaneous bliss, similarly, the opulence of offering increased by adding first-class dahis and soups. As a divine weapon released in a battle is invincible, similarly, the different varieties of cooked spinach acquired undefeatable tastes and qualities. The ladies scented their offering and with their pure desire to prepare everything with love and devotion. Just as the Ganges looks beautiful flowing past Kashi, similarly, the wonderful varieties of food look very attractive. According to their heart's desires, the Yajnaputnis put these foods in golden pots with crystal lids. The pots glittered attractively from the different objects reflected on their crystal lids. The ladies covered the pots with fine white cloth. Ignoring the many people milling about the sacrificial arena, they held the pots on their upraised lotus palms and walked out. Those best of ladies appeared like many-branched desire trees moving on the earth to satisfy the needy. While walking along, they communicated with each other through eye movements and occasionally turned their lotus faces towards Krishna's friends. The submissive coward boys ran ahead, showing the way to Krishna. Feeling ecstatic, the coward boys spoke in soft, joyful voices to indicate the proper direction. The ladies looked like beautiful lotus flowers wandering over the earth. By carrying pots of food in their lotus palms, they became as fortunate as the gopis who always associate with Krishna. Refulgent as golden lotuses, the Yajnaputnis held the pots and walked with the grandeur of a band of she-elephants. The weight of their excessive love for Krishna appeared like a heavy jewel necklace on their hearts. Anxiety filled their minds. Due to the heavy weight of the pots, full breasts, and hips, the ladies proceeded slowly and steadily toward the Lord of their hearts. Though walking was painful, because they were surrendered souls, they felt no inconvenience while going to Krishna. Due to conflicting moods of transcendental ecstasy, they sometimes ran toward their beloved or stumbled and progressed very slowly. The soft jingling of their waist bells and the runu, 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 runu sound of their ankle bells vibrated sweetly as they moved. After going a short distance, they saw the plants and creepers of Braj bending down in a humble, blissful way. From this, they assumed that Krishna, the ocean of all transcendental qualities, must be nearby. They went mad due to their intense love for the Lord. Suddenly, they saw an effulgence more beautiful than a dense rain cloud, a mound of kajal, and a bouquet of blue lotus flowers combined. Upon meeting their faces, Krishna's effulgence turned into kajal surrounding their eyes and reflecting on their hair parts. Touching their necks, his effulgence embraced them as a garland of blue lotus flowers. Krishna's effulgence turned into tamal flowers to wrap around their ears. When Krishna's effulgence touched their breasts, it rested there as a necklace of blue sapphires. Illuminating their bodies, Krishna covered them with the blue dress of his effulgence. With unblinking eyes, the wives of the brahmanas beheld their beloved Shyam before them. Resting his left arm on Subal's shoulder, Krishna looked like a wave in an unlimited ocean of beauty. He playfully twirled a lotus flower in his right hand while simultaneously spinning the minds of the ladies with loving agitation. He wore a peacock feather on his turban, golden yellow cloth around his body, and a garland of forest flowers and leaves hung from his neck. Sandalwood paste and colored minerals adorned his transcendental body. Krishna released a shower of nectar with his attractive bright smile that was more splendorous than the moonshine. Like someone greeting a desirable guest, the ladies opened the doors of their eyes in ecstasy and welcomed Saimashundar into their hearts. Although Krishna appeared like a prankish paramour lover, his frivolous behavior charmed their hearts. The ladies considered, is he a dramatic dancer about to enact a wonderful pastime? Is he Cupid personified? Or is he the embodiment of conjugal love? Is he the personified bliss of love? Is he the very form of pleasurable pastimes? All these questions raced through the excited minds of the Yajnapatnis. Due to absorption in thoughts of Krishna, they acted boldly, free from doubts and hesitation. Conquered by love, they lost control of their minds while tasting the mellow of their relationship with the Lord. Having taken complete control of their senses, Krishna entered their hearts, came outside, and again re-entered their hearts. During this experience, the Yajnapatnis thought, how amazing! Our beloved Saimashundar is standing before us and simultaneously standing in our hearts. In such a bewildered state, the ladies saw Krishna inside their hearts when they closed their eyes, and upon opening their eyes, they saw their beloved before them. Although satisfied to see Krishna within their hearts, they moved closer to him upon opening their eyes. The wives looked very beautiful holding the offerings of food in their attractive lotus bud-like hands. Just as a desire tree fulfills the heart's desires, similarly, Krishna felt satisfied seeing the beautiful bodies of the ladies which appeared like glittering vines growing in a celestial pleasure garden. Krishna joyfully addressed those doe-eyed ladies. Oh, my dear ones, did you suffer any inconvenience in coming here? Oh, fortunate ladies, please sit down and make yourselves comfortable. I can see that you have great love for me because you have personally brought me foodstuffs. There is no way I can repay you for your wonderful service. May you find complete satisfaction in your love for me and thus relieve me of my debt to you. Krishna's sweet deep voice sounded like rumbling clouds. He soothed the ears of the Yajnapatnis with his love-soaked, distinctly pronounced words which were sweeter than the drops of nectar falling from the autumn moon. The wives of the brahmanas thought that they had attained the pinnacle of fortune just by hearing him. Taking Krishna through the aperture of their lotus eyes, they embraced him within their hearts. Melting in rapturous joy, they relinquished all fears and anxieties. With their creeper-like hands, these fortunate ladies offered the fragrant flowers of their affection to worship their beloved. Krishna enchanted the minds of the brahmanas' wives by saturating them with spiritual bliss, and he completely removed the painful fire of separation. Krishna continued speaking, "You should return to your husbands and finish the sacrifice. I am pleased by persons who worship me in my form as the enjoyer of sacrifices." Although Krishna's splendid face glowed like the full moon, instead of pouring out heavenly nectar, he delivered bitter poison in the form of unpalatable words. The frustration of the brahmanas' wives' long-awaited desires drained all the color from their bodies. Their minds had become fully attached to Krishna by repeatedly hearing about him from the lips of the Brajavasis. Upon their arrival and initial meeting with Krishna, he encouraged their blossoming desires by saying, "Come and sit down. Then a few minutes later, he destroyed the flourishing creeper of their desires and made them miserable. Their faces turned pale and cheerless due to being completely ignored. An unbearable pain supplanted the joy that they previously felt. Their hearts severely hurt. Tears gushed out of their closed eyes. Just as a demigoddess does not cast a shadow, similarly, these grief-stricken ladies no longer flash their brilliant effulgences. Just as the light in an oil lamp diminishes with the exhaustion of fuel, similarly, the natural glow of the Brahmana's ladies eventually decreased to nil. Giving up their shyness, the wives appealed to Krishna with choked voices. O Almighty One, you are the dearest one to all living entities. Please do not speak such cruel words that pierce the course of our hearts like a thunderbolt. Please listen attentively and do not deprive us the pleasure of seeing you, for if you do, we will surely die. How could such a thing happen? Alas! Does a river rushing out to a mountain peak turn back and take shelter inside the mountain? Of course not. Rather, it flows naturally to the ocean, which remains neutral and unaffected. You are everything for those who have nothing in this world, O Murari. We have no one else in this world but you. Therefore, we can no longer find any pleasure in returning home. In dense darkness, one may make a mistake and go in the wrong direction. But by the power of his piety, he may come to the right path. Similarly, if without any endeavor a blind man attains divine vision, he will not reject that fortune. Alas, no doubt you are learned in ethics and morality, but these words of yours are devoid of love and affection. Until now we have maintained our lives solely by hearing your name and fame. You emanate the beauty, splendor, and sweetness of 1,000 cupids, but where is your sweetness now? O Damodar, although you are proud, please listen to us for a few moments. You have promised to never reject anyone who serves you, and one says, O Lord, from today on, I am yours. Now keep your promise. We have given up the dark cave of household life, which is nothing but a bitter path full of the thorns of hard work. Now please accept us as your maidservants. Our husbands, fathers, sons, brothers, relatives, and friends will no longer take us back. They will reject us and laugh at us. Even the sinful people will criticize us. But despite all of this, we offer our bodies in the service of your lotus feet. Therefore, O Lord, we humbly beg you to please show us your compassion. Please take control of the chariots of our minds and quickly grant our cherished desire. O compassionate one, we are fully surrendered souls, so please accept us. Intoxicate us with a shower of your nectarian association. On our heads and breasts, we respectfully hold the fragrant flowers which you neglectfully kick away with your lotus feet. Until now, the Yajnaputnis had carefully concealed their love for Krishna within their hearts. Now their bodies, covered with bumps of ecstatic delight, clearly revealed their intense attachment to the Lord. The face of Damodar gleamed attractively like the soothing rays of the full moon. His leaf-like lips bathed in a sweet smile, and his white teeth shone with a slightly reddish hue resembling pomegranate seeds. After hearing the pleasing prayers of the Yajnaputnis, Krishna said, "Listen attentively as I fill your ears with the truth. Such stubborn behavior does not befit you. You should understand that a self-controlled person who surrenders to the scriptures and hears about me, chants my name in glories, and meditates on my form can very easily bring me under his control. Such perfection is not achieved by physical proximity to me. O upholders of the truth, please therefore return to your homes and meditate on me. By this practice, you will get free from material bondage and attain me, the friend and Lord of all creation." Actually, in this birth, as the wives of the Brahmanas, it will not be beneficial for you to physically associate with me, a member of the Vaishya community. It will be better for you to think of me within your minds. I will also think of you and firmly embrace you there. Please go home and do not be in anxiety about your relatives. Do not worry. Your husbands will not be inimical toward you. Indeed, your husbands, children, and relatives are dear to you because I am residing within them in my expanded form as the Paramatma. Only one who has been rejected by me will be envious of a person who has offered his heart to me, the form of the Absolute Truth. The ladies drank the nectar of Krishna's words with the cups of their ears. In this way, Krishna showed his expertise in presenting arguments from different points of view. The Yajnapatnis appreciated his reasonable words and felt great joy within their hearts. Seeing this as Krishna's mercy, they fixed their minds on him and eagerly took his handsome form into their hearts. Driven by Cupid, they disregarded Krishna's contradictory behavior and relished the splendid beauty of his wonderful transcendental form. Though perspiring and shedding tears of joy, the doe-eyed ladies somehow or other managed to return home. One of the wives of the Brahmanas, though forcefully kept home by her angry husband, entered a state of ecstasy upon hearing descriptions of Krishna's beauty from the coward boys. Not caring for the poisonous words of her crazy husband, she absorbed herself in loving meditation on Krishna. Then she lost external consciousness and saw Krishna manifest before her, saying, "Give up everything and come live with me in Vrindavan." After receiving this order, she prepared herself to meet Krishna. Just as one planning to visit a foreign country waits for an auspicious time, similarly, she took this as the ideal time to satisfy her desire to enjoy with Krishna in the groves of Vrindavan. On account of her complete attachment to Krishna, and because of having seen him once in meditation, she adopted the principle of rejecting a lower thing for a higher thing. Therefore, she abandoned her mood of identifying as the wife of a Brahmana. It is not very surprising, then, that she gave up her material body. Within a moment, she obtained a spiritual body and enjoyed blissful pastimes with Krishna. Attaining the direct association of Krishna naturally fills one with inconceivable delight. Her intense love for the Lord forced her to reject the control of her husband and submit herself to Krishna. No obstacle could diminish her ever-increasing love for Krishna. Although one may use his fingernails to break off a small piece from a tender creeper, that piece will continue to live and later sprout again. Similarly, it appeared that the Brahmana's wife perished with the demise of her material body, but actually she continued to exist in her spiritual body. She continued living at home in a spiritual body just suitable for pleasing the Lord. After some time, she got the association of Krishna's intimate Brajagopis who taught her exactly how to act to satisfy Krishna. Thus, she became qualified to obtain his blissful association in the coming days. By repeatedly studying Krishna's transcendental qualities, she overcame all impediments. As the ocean waves continually break on the beach, the desire to see Krishna constantly moved in her heart. By the strength of her bhajan, she cut her bondage to Maya and developed intense yearning to attain Krishna. At this stage of Krishna consciousness, she considered her husband and family to be no more important than straw in the street. A moment later, she left her body. This amazing act eclipsed the fame of even the greatest yogi who by deep concentration leaves his body at his own will. Taking note of her pure devotion for Krishna, the Yajnik Brahmanas, who were acharyas of Vedic wisdom, felt sorrowful and condemned themselves. They said, "Alas! To hell with our lives since we have no love for Krishna. To hell with our expertise in the rituals of sacrifice, our charitable acts, and our extensive learning. To hell with our abilities, intelligence, self-realization, and aristocratic background. To hell with our asanas, meditation and concentration, and to hell with our knowledge of tantra and mantra. Oh, although our wives have never done japa, studied the Vedas, undergone the purificatory rites, followed the formalities of cleanliness, or engaged in pious rituals, just see the pure love they have for Krishna. They never studied or meditated on the nature of the self. They merely heard the transcendental glories of Lord Hari from the lips of pure devotees. But just see the intensity of their love for Krishna that inspired them to act so wonderfully. We have never seen all these incredible feelings before. Giving up all shame, our wives ignored their kinsmen and acted frivolously. overwhelmed by the order of Krishna, they consider the requests of their husbands and relatives to be no more than straw. Commenting on the lady who left her body in anxiety to meet Krishna, the Brahmanas said, "What can we say about this? Only after many lifetimes of severe austerities can a perfect yogi leave his body at will by controlling his life airs and raising the Atma through the six chakras. Yet in order to see her beloved Lord, this lady surmounted all obstacles and attained a position rarely achieved by the greatest yogis. Who can understand the nature of Krishna Prema? What can we say about our cruel treatment of our wives? Although we have heard so many things, we paid no attention to their devotion to Krishna or to their request for articles to offer him. Even though we are supposed to be intelligent, it seems that the same Lord covered us with illusion in order to shower mercy upon our wives." Though ornamented with Vedic knowledge, the Brahmanas lamented deeply and fell speechless. Renouncing their pride, they sat down on the ground. When their wives returned, the Brahmanas could understand that Krishna's association had transformed them. Their wives displayed all auspicious qualities now that their hearts were saturated with divine love. The ladies were filled up to the necks with the unlimited beauty of Krishna, and they cried tears of joy. Enchanted by Krishna's delightful character, their hearts surged with continuous bliss. They existed in a transcendental realm far beyond any amount of piety and knowledge. Seeing that their wives had become liberated souls, those effulgent, broad-minded Brahmanas smiled happily. They showed more respect to their wives than ever before. Now the Brahmanas honored their wives more than they did the Shastras, Gurus, and other exalted Brahmanas. It is not surprising that they stood up and greeted their wives with great affection. Indeed, anyone who sees someone who is deeply in love with Krishna will also develop affection for Krishna. The Yajnapatnis who had seen Krishna praised their friend who gave up her body because she could not go out. One lady said, "No one in the world surpasses her fortune. Not only in this birth, but in all her previous auspicious births, she must have enjoyed intimate pastimes with Krishna." After saying this, the wives of the Brahmanas showed indifference towards their husbands. It is Krishna's nature to reciprocate with his devotees according to their moods of love. Krishna, who is expert and soft-hearted, fulfilled the desire of the lady who gave up her body by submerging her in an unlimited river of love. He gave her the association of his dearest gopis who always enjoy ecstatic pastimes with him. The gopis embraced her, asked about her welfare, and taught her the art of pleasing Krishna. Radiant with pure love, she quickly attained the qualification to associate intimately with Krishna. Krishna was very happy to see this. Meanwhile, Krishna, Balaram, and their coward boyfriend sat down to relish the feast offered by the Brahmanas' wives. Krishna always enjoys eating food that is nicely prepared and artistically displayed. The delicious foodstuffs were prepared purely by the Yajnapatnis and flavored with the nectar of their deep love for Krishna. After finishing his meal, Krishna joked with his friends and drove the cows home. Krishna played his charming murali in order to extinguish the fire of separation within the hearts of the Vrajagopis who were waiting all day for his return. Hearing that melodious flute, the trees, plants, creepers, and all the directions became enlivened and beautiful. Tasting the sweet nectar of Krishna's enchanting murali entrapped the birds, she-deer, and animals. Keeping his brother Balaram in front, Krishna, the embodiment of blissful prema, walked into Vrindavan surrounded by his friends. The lotus face of Krishna looked extremely beautiful, framed by his dark blue locks of hair and covered by a thick layer of dust from the feet of the cows. The slightly tilted turban on his head looked gorgeous with its artistic ornament of hanging red Ashok flowers. The restless movement of Krishna's splendid Makara earrings and the blue lotus flower resting on his ear further increased his elegance. The pollen falling from that flower mixed with the drops of Krishna's perspiration to enhance the gentle radiance of his cheeks. As Krishna moved slowly along the path, his beautiful ankle bells jingled sweet melodies. The sweet, drawn-out tunes of his murali filled the ears and minds of everyone with delight. As the evening approached, the gopis spoke incessantly about Krishna. Upon hearing the bellowing of the returning cows, the talks of the gopis reached a climax of excitement. Seeing their excessive craving to meet Krishna, the flute sound came as a thief to steal the jewel-like hearts of the doe-eyed one. The faces of the gopis looked like a cluster of fresh white lotuses opening under the cool rays of the full moon. Watching the last dim rays of the setting sun, the gopis merged in a state of wondrous joy. They cast away their shyness, knowing that they would soon satisfy their desire to meet the moon of Gokul. In their anxiety to see Krishna, they felt a moment to be a millennium. The pure love of the fortunate gopis surpassed all mental speculation. During the time of sunset, while the stars were still hidden behind the curtain of dusk, the gopis ascended to the palace rooftops to drink the nectar from Krishna's lotus face as he came back with the cows. Standing on the rooftops, the glittering bodies of the gopis appeared like a row of stars rising over the horizon. Their exquisite beauty shone like a flag of the wealth of good fortune. The dancing of their creeper-like eyebrows spread a dark hue over the palaces. The Yamuna River held garlands to offer to Krishna in the form of her waves. The restless glances of the gopis filled the sky with alternating colors of blue and pink. Their open eyes splashed blue in all directions, and the constant blinking of their eyes covered the evening sky with a pinkish hue. It appeared as if the sky was painted with alternating clusters of blue and pink lotus flowers. The brilliance of their teeth beautified their faces when they yawned. Aglow with perfect health, the gopis looked like lakes full of blossoming lotuses. Krishna's face seemed to be a sleepless moon. Seeing the fickle movements of the gopis' eyebrows, Krishna understood they were waging a war in their minds with that clever enchanter named Cupid. Due to her constant loving ecstasy, one gopi felt confident of being favored by a festival that night. Overwhelmed with her cherished desire, she suddenly saw Krishna gazing directly at her. Electrified with the thought that Krishna might come to her house, that gopi joyfully glanced toward the faces of her friends. Holding an expensive pearl necklace in her joined palms, one anxious and distressed gopi said, "Oh, Kundalata, I am dying. But just nearby, Krishna is walking with the grace of a regal elephant. Please give him this pearl necklace before he runs off to enjoy pastimes in another gopi's house. I will be forever indebted to you if you do this." Another gopi said, "Hey, Sakhi, what can the harsh words of our superiors do to us? Why should we allow modesty to restrict us? Forgetting our fears and anxieties, let us drown in the ocean of bliss by embracing that handsome youth. With the tender creepers of our arms, we will wrap ourselves tightly around that charming blue desire tree. Oh, Sakhi, indeed, this is an auspicious moment. So let us go to the house of the king of Vrindavan." Thus the gopis talked about Krishna's all-attractive transcendental body. Just like great mystic yogis, the gopis withdrew their senses and completely absorbed themselves in Krishna's delightful form. Anxious to drink the nectar from their golden lotus faces, Krishna looked lovingly at the gopis. As if directly enjoined, they embraced each other within their minds through the touch of their eyes. The gopis offered their glances laden with a concentrated nectar of their affection as gifts for Shyamasundara's pleasure. Krishna gladly accepted these gifts as he proceeded into Vrindavan. Feeling momentarily pacified by this, the gopis responded with joyful smiles. Krishna strolled down the road surrounded by his dearest boyfriends. With great anticipation, he repeatedly said, "When will I see my beloved smiling at me and casting sidelong glances?" By stating this, Krishna revealed his cherished desire upon entering his home. Since conjugal love for Krishna eternally resided within their hearts, the gopis had already realized the perfection of knowledge. Simply by beholding the sweetness of Krishna, their minds thrilled in jubilation and their bodies displayed bumps of delight. Like two clouds of nectar, Damodar and Balaram poured liquid bliss into the eyes of their parents. The magnificent beauty of these two boys, which is the very essence of sweetness, gave their parents limitless happiness. Using warm water and a soft cloth, Yashoda and Rohini joyfully washed the dust from the bodies of their sons. Krishna and Balaram appeared like a pair of elephant cubs being bathed in a river by their affectionate mothers. After bathing, they looked clean and elegant. Then their servants dressed them in auspicious garments, applied aromatic oils, and adorned their bodies with attractive ornaments. After eating some delicious foods, Damodar and Balaram took rest on two opulent beds. These two brothers appeared like two beautiful moons moving on the earth. Thus ends the 13th chapter of Ananda Brindavan Champu, which describes Krishna's favoring the wives of the brahmanas during his pastimes of youth.
Mama, can I do ya home?